Right now at Lowe's, get savings you won't believe on our top Whirlpool appliances. Save $1,200 on Whirlpool Gold stainless steel four-door refrigerators, now only $1,299. Or clean up with savings of $600 on Whirlpool Cabrio high-efficiency top-load washers and dryers. Get the pair for $998. Plus, get an additional 5% off every day when you use your Lowe's consumer credit card or any Lowe's business credit account. Lowe's, never stop improving. Offers valid through 11/14. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Jenny Hatch Show at Blogging Mothers Magazine, and I'm your host. My show today is going to be a conversation on the current state of childbirth in America. And my special guests are Laura Shanley. Laura, are you there?
I am here.
And Lynn Griesmer. Lynn, are you there?
Good morning, Jen.
It's so great to hear your voice. The three of us have been working diligently for many years to affect change, and sometimes it feels like we're spinning our wheels, although we do feel like we've had great success in our own families and with some of our friends. Laura shared something on her Facebook wall recently that I felt would be a good place to begin the show. Laura, could you tell a little bit about what happened?
Yeah, this was an article that was in the Boston Globe, I think, last week. And it was talking about the sort of alarming C-section rate. And they had a paragraph in there about a conference on obstetrical safety where, I don't know who was speaking, but whoever was speaking asked the physicians in the audience, what is your C-section rate? Is it 15% or below? And they said, like maybe two hands went up, and then, you know, 15 to 30%, a few more hands went up, and then over 30%, and the majority of hands in the audience went up. And then the next question was, and how many of you care? And not one hand went up, and the audience broke out in laughter. And I thought, oh, God, what, you know, how horrible is that, that they just, how cavalier that they just didn't care. And here, you know, we've found a few years ago there was a study that came out of England that was published in The Lancet that didn't get much coverage here at all, but it was about how by the time you have your third C-section, how your chances of having a hysterectomy go up 350%. This is nothing to laugh at, that this isn't just another way for a baby to be born, that there's real repercussions. And another thing that hasn't gotten much press is that these mothers that are recovering from C-sections are on morphine, and so we have breastfeeding babies that are on morphine, that are getting morphine through the breast milk, and this is another major concern. So to have that cavalier attitude it's horrible, and I think women have to stop waiting for the doctors to decide that they're going to try to lower the C-section rate, because right now it just keeps steadily climbing.
And Lynn, do you feel like there's any end in sight? Could we reach a 50, 60, 70% C-section rate in America?
Yes, we could, Jenny, easily. See, we use the word alarming. Who is the C-section rate alarming? It's alarming to you, me, and Laura, and hundreds and thousands of other women. But for the most part, I do not think that the average woman is dissatisfied with what's going on in the hospital. And until we can change the individual hearts and minds, we're not going to continue to see the kind of change we would like to see.
Well, we all have more than five children. Laura and I have five. Laura, you had five babies. Lynn, you had six, right? And,
yes.
And so it was important to us to be able to have these big families. But for these mothers coming up, you have that first C-section, the second and the third, and the repercussions for that fourth or fifth pregnancy. A lot of women just, you know, they feel like they're taking their lives in their hands to have the faith to go have another surgery. And most of the women I know who've had those three and four C-sections, they're done. They know that it's just too dangerous to even risk it. What do you guys think?
I think it's definitely affecting a woman's decision to have another baby. And the other thing was, you know, a couple years ago, there was an article both in the Denver Post and in the New York Times about healthcare agencies that are starting to say okay, once you've had a C-section, we're assuming you're going to need another C-section. So if you have had a C-section, you are now either uninsurable or we are going to make your premium so high that it's basically unaffordable. So, you know, that's something else to consider when someone says, you know, I'm just going to go to the hospital for my, this is my first baby, and I just want to go to the hospital just because I feel more comfortable for the first one being there. And they don't realize that if they have a C-section for that first baby, that, you know, if they do want to have insurance, that they could conceivably be uninsurable or their premiums could skyrocket. And it's something else to consider. But as you were talking about, just the trauma that women go through, and not all women, some women breeze through their C-sections and they're, you know, like, what's the big deal? But that it can be traumatic enough that it really is affecting their desire to have more children. And, you know, that's how many babies won't be brought into this world because women do not want to go through that again. And that's sad that people are limiting themselves and their families in that way.
And I've often thought the greatest gift that I gave to my older children was a younger brother or sister. They love their siblings more than any other people on the planet. What do you think, Lynn?
I think that our culture is shifting and has shifted to a 2 children or less. I believe that the average in the United States might have been 2.7 children per family, and I think it's dropping to 2.1%. And I wonder if we're following Europe, Italy, Spain, of a 1.1, getting down below replacement. So I'm thinking our trend is based on economics, based on career, based on just the inconvenience or the difficulty of a large family. So let's say a lot of families in the future might only think about 2 children. Well, I've had friends in the birth community say sometimes a woman, it might take her till the 3rd child to really become more of an expert. Perhaps she was mistakenly had a C-section with her first, maybe a midwife with the second, and the progress that many of us make as we have more children. So I'm imagining a culture that might continue to have 2 children or less, and maybe they just aren't going to learn or aren't going to care or are going to continue to think that we need the hospital model.
Well, I know for me, it took 3 births in the hospital for me to get to the point where I said, never again. And it's interesting that at that moment in my life, although I had had the desire to give birth unassisted before that, that is when Laura, 1994, wrote her book, and I managed to get my hands on it. And when Laura talked about the power of faith, that just resonated with me. And I knew that that was something that I could work on and learn how to control to the point where I could help manifest in my life an ideal birthing scenario. It took me a few tries, but I did manage to get there. I had to work through a lot of stuff in my head. But how many women are willing to take on this challenge? You know, I know that my mother claimed that I was brainwashed by this guru, Laura Shanley. Your voodoo powers are extreme, Laura. She forgot that I had had the desire to give birth unassisted with my 2nd baby. So, you know, it's not that Laura brainwashed me. What you did, Laura, with your book, Unassisted Childbirth, was you challenged me to take on the task of learning how to control my thoughts and banish fear from my heart. Could you talk a little bit about your book and what's going on with it right now?
Yeah, so my book was published by an academic press in 93, 94, different dates on it for some reason. Hardback came out end of December, paperback came out early January. So, and it's still in print. So, you know, I do reach a limited market. I think I do reach women, not just women that are interested in unassisted childbirth. I tried to write the book so that it would appeal to women regardless of where they want to give birth or who they want with them, that the focus of the book is really how you can create a better birth by overcoming your fear, working with your beliefs, understanding the power of thoughts and feelings. And so what has been, I'd say, more successful probably is my website, unassistedchildbirth.com. I consistently get 30,000 to 40,000 people a month visiting the site. I have tons of birth stories on there, which so many women find valuable. I found them so valuable when I was pregnant. For me, it was reading birth stories at that time in, say, spiritual midwifery, I make ask, and now there's just so many wonderful stories on the internet. So I have just dozens and dozens of inspiring stories and articles on my site. So I'd say that has probably been, I consider that really a success. And I've done a lot, and I've done speaking, and I do counseling with women, helping them to overcome their fears, and regardless of where they're going to give birth. Now, in the last few years, there's been a lot more media attention towards unassisted birth, really around the world. And so there have been several documentaries made that I've participated in that have aired in the UK and also all over the world on Discovery Health Channel. And now the BBC is interested in making a documentary. They're looking for women in the UK that are planning unassisted births. So all of this recent interest in the last couple years from the media, I think, has spurred my publisher on, because they asked me to do an updated version of my book. Also, my book is coming out in France, so someone bought the French rights to it. So it's going to be coming out there in February, and that really spurred my publisher on. They thought, wow, there really is interest. And Michelle Odant, who is a well-known French obstetrician who's supportive of home birth and unassisted birth, he volunteered to write a foreword to it. It's a short foreword, but it basically says all that's needed in birth is the mother and the baby and the importance of privacy. And so that'll be a little bit something different in the new book, is this little foreword from him and updated statistics and a couple new stories. And actually, the French version and the American version are different. I wrote two different versions. So the American version is also coming out in February. Unfortunately, because it's an academic press, it's coming out in hardback, and it's going to be expensive. It's $37, and it's going to be marketed to libraries and universities. So I think a $15 version will be available on Kindle, but there at this point there isn't going to be a reasonably priced paperback. So I'll continue selling the paperback, which isn't cheap because it's an academic press. It's $26-$27 for the paperback, which you can get through my site or through Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. But it's still been exciting. I've been working on that the past year, and maybe now with more people going electronic, then more people will read it on Kindle too. So I've been, really delving back into the world of birth and rethinking a lot of things. And I made a few changes in my book. I tried to be a little bit more open. People have been critical of me for my views on pain. And so that I set up this unrealistic ideal of having no pain. I tried to be a little bit more open-minded about that, because I did have some pain. Most women have some pain, but I do like to present the idea of painless or pleasurable childbirth, because I think it is a reality for women, and the more women that believe it, the more of a reality it will become.
I've had three painless births, so it can happen. But my unassisted birth that was a total success was an extremely painful push. So while I was pushing, I was in pain. So you can have pain too. Well,
right.
Thank you.
So I tried to be open about that.
Thank you so much for the update. It's a principle in my faith, in my religion, that out of the mouth of two or more witnesses, we find the truth. And it was really interesting to me when I was talking to Lynn at one point to realize, and I didn't know this for a long time, that she had written her book and organized the first conference without even really being aware of you writing your book. Isn't that true, Lynn?
I think, my daughter was born in 1996, and I immediately began writing a book on unassisted birth because there wasn't anything out there for me, so I thought. So I started writing it, and someone said, oh, dear, there's a woman, Laura Kaplan Shanley, who wrote a book. You better check it out, and I don't know what her title is. So I did come across Laura's book probably 1997. And my focus is a little bit different, and it offers something different to the marketplace. But what I wanted to say to the listeners is that we need to look for resources. Laura has great resources. I have my book, Unassisted Home Birth. My CD is titled Your Body, Your Birth, Secrets for a Satisfying and Successful Birth. Jenny has a website as well as some books you can get on Kindle. But we women are very impressionable. Jenny's parents had opinions, and women are impressionable, especially by those closest in their circle of friends and family. So if your friends and family have had interventions at birth, and that's all that they're talking about, this is the reality and the, you know, kind of the world you're going to be exposed to, and you just might end up with a similar story. So I want to encourage listeners to make it your mission to go after your own story, one of beauty and courage, not subservience to a system that is in business to make money and to do things for their convenience. And another great resource that came out 3 years ago, Ricky Lake's documentary, Business of Being Born, and that shares a lot of statistics. It shows that in a normal hospital, the staff was monitoring 90% of women choosing to have epidurals. And not only are they choosing, they're sort of being persuaded. So, you know, the kind of childbirth you're going to have sometimes depends on the environment you're stepping into.
It's so true. And I know how excited I was, Lynn, when I heard about you organizing the Unassisted Childbirth Conference back in, I think it was, what, 95?
1998. In Charleston, South Carolina, April of 1998. We had a great time. Maybe 40 people showed up. Go ahead.
Marilyn Moran was able to come, and as we all know, she was one of the main pioneers in helping to restore this knowledge, and her book, Birth and the Dialogue of Love, was written a long time ago. And she was able to come, and then she died a few weeks after the conference was over. And I just think about that as her just kind of passing the baton to the next generation to say, okay, ladies, you take this and you run with it. And all of us have worked so hard on websites and books and conferences and promotions trying to get the word out. And I think we have had great success. But I know for me, when I hear about doctors laughing and I see the statistics and how, as a society, not just in America but around the world, we're on this trajectory towards technocratic birth all the time, my heart does become a little bit faint. And, oh, I should do more. I got to do more. But you know what? It really is up to each individual mother and each family. What type of life do you want to live? Can either of you talk about that?
Go ahead, Laura. Well, I've always said in a film that I helped produce called A Clear Road to Birth, Judy Seaman was the producer, but I was very involved with it. And at the end, I say that I've always tried not to proselytize, that I didn't want to go out there and say, okay, I have to save all these women. You know, it's not our job to save all these women. And so I think what we have to do, what I want to do and what all of us want to do is just to offer this information and trust that women are, they're adults, they can make their own decisions, that if you give them this information, that they're smart enough to decide for themselves what is the best birth for them. And I don't tell people, when people come to me all the time, do you think I should have an unassisted birth? And I always say, this is not a question that I can answer. You know, only you know what's best for you. And certainly, women are there are women that have wonderful births in the hospital. There are some great doctors out there. There are some great midwives out there. So I think, you know, my goal is always to just help women have better births. I think as far as Ricky Lake, I'm just thrilled with the publicity she's been bringing to the home birth movement, just to the natural birth movement in general. I think she's done so much. My only complaint with her is that on her book, on the front of the book, it says, you know, something about this for the first time, like a book that tells women all their choices in birth. Well, Ricky chose not to include unassisted birth in her choices. And so this is, you know, that still kind of irks me a little bit. But let's be honest here. Unassisted birth is a legal choice. And I feel in a way like some of our sisters have turned their backs on us, because why shouldn't women at least be told, yes, this is an option? If you are told, okay, you have to have another C-section because you've had one C-section, and they don't know that, no, actually, if they can't find a midwife or if it's not legal in their state for a midwife to have a home birth, or their hospital says, no, we don't do VBACs, you know, vaginal birth after cesarean, that unassisted birth is a choice. And so so that bothers me, that that there are people in the natural birth community that will not even tell women that it's a choice. But as I said, I think we just need to offer this information, and we don't have to shove it down people's throats, but it's there. Let's just all share our stories, and then women can make their own decisions and what is best for them and their families. And I so I think that's what's happening.
And so, Jenny,
Lynn,
you
want to chime in on that?
Yeah, you asked the question, what kind of life do you want to live? And it's an important question that we all have to grapple with. And I think that we human beings have in common that we want love, we want to seek the truth, we want to be happy, and we want a deep life. However, sometimes some of us will say, oh, that person's shallow, or some people are living a shallow life. I think we really want, we all want a deep life as time goes on and we get older. And how can you have a deep life, the depths of a birth in a hospital where you are subservient and inferior to a system in place? This does not help you develop a deep life. And, you know, the attachment, the initial attachment between mother and baby is compromised with breastfeeding, baby taken away, whether it has to go to the NICU, whether the mom has had a C-section, an epidural, even sometimes a natural birth. They'll take the baby away, and you have to fight for this. Put it in down in a room separated and maybe give the baby sugar water or whatever. But this is not helping us to have love between mother and baby and a deep life. And I think that a lot of women, they know at their core level that there might be something wrong with this kind of birth, but they don't have the courage to stand up against it, or they don't know that they have the choices. But we have to, you know, when we're told to submit to ultrasounds and submit to all this stuff that is, you know, your birth is managed, this doesn't help us to have a deep life. And just one more thing, men and women who have birthed together, husbands and wives, it completely changes lives. It the husband is so involved like never in a hospital, and this really opens up so much love in the heart, in the life. And it's this is why Laura, Jen, and I keep on doing this. Well, most of us, the three of us, are getting past our baby stage and into perimenopause or whatever. And we are so passionate
speak for yourself.
About this.
You speak for yourself. I'd love to have another baby.
And we're going to be passionate about this until the day we die, because we know that there is such truth in this type of birth, and it needs to be told and communicated and shared as liberally as possible.
Well, and us making these choices, it does impact our children. I know Laura's daughter, Michelle, had a beautiful baby boy, Drake, who's her grandson, and he's adorable. And Michelle chose, you know, surrounded by all this insanity in birth, to give birth naturally. And, you know, how did that make you feel, Laura?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I really have tried not to, you know, insist that my children follow my lead, do what I did. But I certainly was hoping that Michelle would at least go the drug-free route. So what she really would have liked, I think, would be a home birth with a non-invasive midwife. Financially, they couldn't do that, and so she gave birth in one of the few birth centers. It's a birth center in a hospital, but it's in Durango. And her midwives were amazingly non-interventive. She wanted to do a water birth, and basically in her labor, it was just me and her partner and her mother-in-law and, you know, Michelle, and Michelle pretty much just labored with us in the room. Every so often, a nurse would come in, but they really left her alone. And then at the very end, she was in the water, and some woman in jeans came in. I didn't even know who she was. Well, she was a midwife, and she just stood off to the side. She didn't insist on checking Michelle. She finally did one check just because Michelle's mother-in-law sort of said, why didn't you check her? But so she did a check, and she never told Michelle to push or not push. She just really let Michelle do what she wanted. and Michelle gave birth naturally in the water, and it was just, she feels so empowered. It was such a wonderful experience for her. She was so proud of herself, and she should be. So, you know, maybe her next one then she might do unassisted. I know I've heard her tell people about the fight-flight response, and I know she really grasped these concepts. So, yeah, that was really satisfying just to see her, you know, give birth in the way that was important for her and without the drugs. It was wonderful.
That's great. And really, so much of my work, I'm constantly thinking about my daughters and my future granddaughters and daughters-in-law, and what can I do now to make things better for them? Is any sort of blowback or pain or rejection that I experience now worth it to smooth things out so that things are better for them? And I know my goal when I began back, you know, when I started working on the internet in 1996, my goal was to mainstream home birth. That's all I was thinking about. I wanted to make it touchable for the mainstream of America, because for a long time it had been this kind of alternative hippie commune type feel to it, and I just wanted it to quietly slide over into the mainstream so that any mother could look at it and say, I could do that. And so that's been the main focus that I've put into it. We've only got about 4 minutes left. I'd love for you both to, again, plug your own books, plug your websites, and perhaps any contact information, and then, you know, just share any final thoughts that are on your heart.
Can I start?
I
would like to hear something that I wonder if it is a trend. In the past year, I've talked to a couple of women who are pro-natural birth, very experienced, studying to be doulas. They want to go into the hospital and serve as doulas to help a woman have a natural birth and kind of be a buffer against the technology. However, they're dropping out of being a doula because they just can't stand what goes on in the hospital as far as this subtle move to kind of tell doulas what they are allowed to do and to not do. So I'm wondering if we're going to have a new structure of doulas in the hospital that are yet another figurehead and just kind of a surprise to women that, hey, it's just a facade, that they might not have the natural birth they have. And I want to share one story. You know, I talk to everybody everywhere I go, so I was talking to a grocery store clerk about birth, and he said, oh, how interesting to meet you. My daughter and son-in-law, they were in their 8th month of pregnancy. They went into their doctors with their written birth plan, wanting a natural birth, outlining what they wanted, and the doctor laughed at them. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, we don't do that. We don't really pay attention to birth plans. So the couple pretty much looked at each other and stood up and walked out of the office, never to return. Now, this is courageous, and it's great, but it's also difficult because there they are in the 8th month having to make a new plan. So, yes, so this ridicule and this laughter goes on more than we like to think. That's just one story, but I know I've heard more. So just I want to encourage women to just look into resources, do your research. If you want my book, unassistedhomebirth.com, it's available on amazon.com. I think that people might enjoy my CD better, Your Body, Your Birth, Secrets for a Satisfying and Successful Birth. I do outline stories and things that are going on in the hospital, and I lead the listener to natural childbirth. So thank you for having me on the show, Jen.
Thanks, Lynn. And Laura, do you have anything you want to share?
Briefly, I'll say about the doula situation, there's a term called epidoula.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
You hold your hand.
Right. You know, we'll help you hold your hand and help you have a better epidural. And so that, you know, that can happen. I mean, it's hard for, it can be really challenging for a woman to have the kind of birth she wants in the hospital. So what I want to know is that there is support. So many women write to me and they say, I have no one to talk to. There are unassisted birth message boards and email lists. There's links at the top of my pages at unassistedchildbirth.com, and they can connect with like-minded women. I think that's so important, that you're not alone. You know, if you want to have a home birth or an unassisted birth, you can find support on the internet. There's wonderful groups. And And I also, you know, as I said, I do counseling over the phone or in person if they live in the Denver area. And people can email me, laurashamley@comcast.net. And, of course, go to my website, and there's all kinds of articles. And I highly recommend, Jenny, your site and Lynn's site. And there's other sites out there that they can find links from our sites. And there's a world of information out there.
There is. And my books, I've written three of them. One's Elijah Birth. I wrote that for fathers to help them overcome their terror in being asked to assist their wives with an unassisted birth. I wrote A Lotus Birth, just talking in detail about my fifth birth with my son Ben. And then my first book, A Mother's Journey, was basically my journey to unassisted childbirth, how I got there. So thank you, ladies, for your time today,
thank
for
you.
Being on the show. It's always a blessing to talk to you. I love you both dearly. And I'm optimistic about the future. I'm sober, but very optimistic when each baby that arrives on the earth holistically is a blessing. And I honor both of you for your hard work to make that happen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
God bless, and we'll talk again.